Welcome to the TaxCast from the Tax Justice Network. I'm Naomi Fowler. This month, we cover the Tax Justice Network's latest Financial Secrecy Index, just out.
What the Financial Secrecy Index has done, I think, is to help the public understand that tax havenry is much, much more deeply embedded in the entire global economy. And it isn't just small players with palm trees, it includes some of the biggest and most powerful countries in the world. United States, United Kingdom, Europe.
We'll speak to the Tax Justice Network's John Christensen in a minute, but before that, it's worth just explaining what the Financial Secrecy Index is and why it's so important. Basically, forget all the tax haven blacklists you've ever heard of. This index tells you the real story about global corruption. It's the world's only non-politicised index. It uses objective criteria and data to assess the world's worst offenders selling secrecy services. And it does that without fear or favour. Countries are ranked in a kind of role of dishonour by combining their secrecy level scores along with the size of the piece they've carved out for themselves of the global offshore market. This is a list you don't want to be at the top of. Before I give you the top 10, here are the kind of things each country has been assessed on. Do they make companies, trusts and foundations reveal their true owners? Are annual accounts made available online in open data format? Do their rules comply with anti-money laundering standards? Is there a public register of the ownership and annual accounts of limited partnerships? Is there a public register of the ownership of real estate? Is there a central register of the users of freeports for the storage of high-value assets? Do they have banking secrecy rules with the risk of prison terms for banking whistleblowers? Are tax court verdicts and proceedings made public? Do they sell harmful tax residency and citizenship schemes? Do they get public access to country-by-country reports filed by companies from around the world? Do they allow unregistered bearer shares for companies? We'll talk about that in a bit. Do they accept large banknotes? Do they publish statistics on their cross-border financial and economic activities? There are more, but we'll stop there. The latest Financial Secrecy Index comes out every couple of years and it assesses more countries each time. The 2018 index looks at 112 countries and we're gradually expanding the index to cover all countries. More will be included as we collect more information and have more resources. Now, you'd think governments around the world would be pouring in money to support work as important as this, wouldn't you? Ask yourself why they're not. And when you hear who the top 10 worst global offenders are in the index, you'll understand, because six of the top 10 are either members of the OECD or their dependencies. Another three are Asian tax havens. And it all goes to show how major economies are driving the market for financial secrecy. So here they are, the top 10 world's worst on the Financial Secrecy Index of 2018. Bring on the drums. Once again, Switzerland is in first place with a high secrecy score of 76.45 out of 100 and in terms of size with 4.5% of the global market. In second place is the United States with a secrecy score of 59.82 out of 100 and huge in terms of size with over 22% of the global market. In third place is the Cayman Islands, a British overseas territory with a high secrecy score of 72.28 out of 100 and close to 4% of the global market. In fourth place is Hong Kong with a high secrecy score of 71.05 out of 100 and over 4% of the global market. In fifth place is Singapore with a secrecy score of 67.13 out of 100 and over 4.5% of the global market. In sixth place is Luxembourg with a secrecy score of 58.20 out of 100 and over 12% of the global market. In seventh place is Germany with a secrecy score of 59.10 out of 100 and over 5% of the global market. In 8th place is Taiwan with a high secrecy score of 75.75 out of 100 and 0.5% of the global market. In ninth place is the United Arab Emirates, the UAE, with a high secrecy score of 83.85 out of 100 and 0.14% of the global market. In 10th place is Guernsey, a UK Crown Dependency, one of Britain's satellite havens, with a high secrecy score of 72.45 out of 100 and just over 0.5% of the global market. In case you're wondering about the United Kingdom, the first thing to say is that if we were to combine it with its satellite havens, the overseas territories and Crown Dependencies where the real dirty work is done before it gets to London, the UK would easily be ranked number one. But in the 2018 index, the UK, minus these satellite havens, has dropped down from number 15 last time to number 23. It also has a low secrecy score of 42.35 out of 100. We'll talk about that later. Now we're going to talk to John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network about the Financial Secrecy Index results. Okay, John, we've had black lists from all sorts of different organisations, being very farcical, but this is something quite different and a lot more important.
Yeah. Look, the Financial Secrecy Index is unique. It looks at 112 countries this time. Ideally, we'd look at every single country in the world, and we look at the laws and the regulations and the compliance with international standards on information exchange and stuff like that. In diagnosing now 20 major indicators of having laws or not having laws or whatever, we can look at the strengths and the weaknesses of each of these countries. And then we look at what's the scale of their offshore financial services market. We use International Monetary Fund data for that. Let's weight these countries according to their importance in the world of offshore finance. And that allows us to arrive at a ranking which says, okay, at the top of the ranking we have this country, Switzerland, as it happens, yet again. Switzerland has a very, very poor record when it comes to its secrecy, its legalized secrecy provisions, its willingness to share information, its compliance with collecting information and exchanging information. In other words, a very high secrecy score and quite a large market share in the overall global market. So this is a very different, very much more scientific approach than the rather politicized approach of blacklisting. That's tax haven, that one isn't. We're not trying to look just at what happens domestically in these countries. We're looking at how they interact with the rest of the world. In other words, the extent to which they're attracting money from all over the world and allowing that money to hide behind not just secret bank accounts, but also companies and trusts and foundations. So this is examining laws, examining treaty provisions, examining compliance and so on, and arriving at a clear secrecy score which can be examined, can be audited, it can be verified by anyone online. What the Financial Secrecy Index has done, I think, is to help the public understand that tax havenry is much, much more deeply embedded in the entire global economy. And it isn't just small players with palm trees. It includes some of the biggest and most powerful countries in the world. United States, United Kingdom, Europe.
Okay, let's talk about the new indicators this time round. In other words, new ways for the Financial Secrecy Index to assess countries on what they're actually doing on the ground. The Financial Secrecy Index has to adjust and adapt to new situations and new developments in the marketplace. So it needs to devise new ways to assess what countries are up to, basically. And there's some quite juicy new ones, aren't there?
Absolutely. The index has always adapted. Each time we publish on it, which happens on a two-year cycle, we've slightly modified it. This time around, we've brought in more indicators. For example, in the last few years, we've had the implementation of country-by-country reporting requirements. The crucial thing there is that the information is actually being collected in the right format, and then it's being shared in the right format with other countries. So we need indicators to cover that. But at the same time, we're trying to bring in new issues. We brought in new indicators, for example, whether countries allow provision for bearer shares. Now, bearer shares are quite simply legal documents, a share certificate, which indicates that whoever's holding that certificate in their hands, a single bit of paper, owns that share. And that share might be the only share issued by a company which might own £200 million worth of assets. So that's essentially a £200 million or $200 million banknote. So extremely useful for money laundering and purposes and so on. So by and large, bearer shares have been banned, but there are still some jurisdictions which use bearer shares, and we thought it important to bring that in as an indicator of willingness to support money laundering. Another indicator that we've looked at and brought in this time is whether or not trusts are being allowed to implement flee clauses. Now, a flee clause is built into, it's a clause that's built into a trust deed, which says that the minute that the trustee or anyone associated with that trust gets wind of a possible investigation by tax authorities or some kind of criminal investigation authority, that trust will be disbanded, uprooted and transferred to a different trust in a different jurisdiction, as if it never existed in its original format, clearly designed to frustrate investigation by legitimate authority. These flee clauses are widely used and extensively available from many, many tax haven jurisdictions. So, you know, we thought it important to include a provision for that to see whether or not jurisdictions are allowing flee clauses.
And there's also an indicator around big banknotes.
Yes, again, big banknotes are
notorious for money launderers.
Absolutely. We had a rather ludicrous situation a few years ago where Luxembourg was issuing, there was a huge spike in the issuance of 500 euro notes. And they said, well, it's because of local consumer demand. But when we followed up by going to shops in Luxembourg and said, do you ever get any 500 euro notes? They said, no, we couldn't be able to handle them. 500 euro notes and $100 bills and stuff like that are extremely convenient for money launderers, but pretty useless for most other purposes because most shops don't really want to handle notes of that size. And they are gradually being withdrawn by many organisations. I mean, for example, the 500 euro note is on its way out now. But nonetheless, we want to see whether a jurisdiction is issuing extremely high value denomination notes because of their usefulness to money launderers, and that is another indicator of a jurisdiction that's trying to accommodate the needs of criminal elements.
Yeah, I mean, the point being that you can pack a million into a briefcase a lot more easily with a handy 500 euro note, right?
That's absolutely right. I mean, if you had to do the same with, you know, single euro notes or single dollar bills, you'd need huge bells and a truck to carry it around with. So it's an extremely handy device for criminals.
Right. The first Financial Secrecy Index released almost 10 years ago in 2009. Since 2009 and this all started, we've had things like Swiss leaks, Lux leaks, Panama Papers, Paradise Papers. It's really been in the public eye more and more as time's gone on. For you, what are the big trends, you know, the big stories that the Financial Secrecy Index from then to 2018 is telling us?
We start looking at the regional pictures, a very interesting regional story emerges. I think the FSI's Financial Secrecy Index is really strong at identifying four key geographic or political poles, which is the Far East, Europe, Britain and its cluster of satellite tax havens, and the United States. That, for me, is the big, big story, and that is that offshore financial secrecy is really heavily embedded in the laws and the practices of these really big players. Now, the biggest player by far, if you look at individual countries, is the United States. They have about 22% of the global market for offshore financial services. They've got very strong secrecy laws embedded in the state laws of Delaware and Nevada and Florida and Wyoming and so on. And they have, as we've seen for a long time, it isn't just under President Trump that we've seen a very weak commitment to international cooperation on sharing information with other countries and making the information publicly available. So, for example, Delaware, Nevada, Florida, Wyoming, absolutely no information is available, publicly available, about the company ownership of the companies registered in those states. Now, if we look at Europe, and here we're talking about Europe without Britain, and this has nothing to do with Brexit, this is just to do with the fact that Britain needs to be treated separately. Europe as a whole has a huge slice, well over 25% of the global market share for offshore financial services. You have players like Switzerland, Luxembourg, Germany, Netherlands, Ireland, Malta, Cyprus, all of them in the top 25 of the Financial Secrecy Index ranking. Collectively, they hold 27% of the global market share. Switzerland, for example, has 4.5% of the total global market. It's got a really poor secrecy score. They are really shocking, 76% out of 100. It's a very weak score, and that's the reason why Switzerland goes right to the top of the ranking.
Right, a really interesting development in this year's Financial Secrecy Index is that the United Kingdom has shifted down the ranking quite significantly. Last time in the Financial Secrecy Index, it was at number 15, and it's gone down many places to number 23. So because of the new indicators, it's not exactly comparing like with like, but something is going on there. And since we're always saying on the TaxCast, the UK is such a big player because if you combine it with all its satellite havens, it would actually overtake Switzerland at number one spot. So what's going on here? We shouldn't get too excited, should we?
No, the UK is widely known for the way in which it's quite duplicitous about these things. And I think this is an example of British duplicity in that British politicians, David Cameron, for example, when he was Prime Minister, made very strong commitments to trying to tidy up the world of tax havens and improve them. And the spotlight has been on Britain for a long time. But the way in which London, as an offshore financial services centre, has worked for decades has been to do its dirty stuff offshore in its satellite tax havens, places like the Channel Islands and the Cayman Islands and British Virgin Islands, Bermuda, Gibraltar. When I was working in Jersey, you know, it was well known that we'd put the really dirty stuff towards Gibraltar. So that's the way the City of London has operated. So British laws at face value actually appear to be rather good and strong in this area, precisely because the big British companies, the law firms and the accounting firms and the banks and so on, wanting to operate out of the City of London, want to have that appearance of being absolutely squeaky clean and operating in a clean cooperative jurisdiction, but they can do their dirty work offshore. The truth of the matter is that Britain really isn't a good player, but they have a very, very large market share. The British market share, if you include the United Kingdom and its satellite tax havens, and now I'm talking about the Channel Islands, Gibraltar, British overseas territories in the Caribbean and Bermuda, in total, they have 22% of the global market share. And some would argue that it's even bigger than that because so many of the former Commonwealth countries or former British colonies, places like Hong Kong, Singapore and Mauritius, and indeed some of the places in the Middle East like Dubai and Bahrain, are, to all intents and purposes, just extensions of City of London people. If you go to these places, you'll see an awful lot of London firms operating out of these former colonies. And that would take the market share up even higher, well into the 30%. And that's why we treat Britain as the third of the big global geopolitical clusters of tax havens. Now, the fourth is a very interesting one, and that's the Far East. And it's another important cluster of secrecy jurisdictions. If you look at the top 25 of our ranking, you've got Hong Kong, Singapore, Taiwan, Thailand, Macau, and Japan. And collectively, these countries account for something of the order of 12%, so not nearly as big as Britain or Europe or the United States.
Not yet.
Not yet. But Hong Kong and Singapore are right there at the top of the rankings. They've got big market shares, over 4% each of them, and very, very weak secrecy scores. So these are big players high up on the rankings. And that's the important thing. If we start to look at what's changed in the index over the last 10 years, we begin to see a fascinating geopolitical story. So if we take those four clusters as a whole, we find that between them, that is the United States, Europe, Britain and the Far East, they have close to 85% of the global market. To all intents and purposes, they are the global market and they are the important players to watch. And if we look at what's happened on the Financial Secrecy Index, which has now been running for 10 years, so we have a decade of comparisons to look at, we see some very interesting stories. The first is that the United States appears to be steadily growing its share of the global market for offshore financial secrecy. In 2007, it held about 18% of the global market share. That's now risen to close to 22%. Now, we don't know all of the reasons behind that growth, but the Financial crisis might well have played a part. It might have steered players away from the euro and sterling and towards the dollar. And Washington's refusal to sign up to the OECD's Common Reporting Standard might also have strengthened the United States' reputation as a tax haven.
Right, because you would want to invest your money or put your money somewhere that isn't cooperating with the rest of the world on information exchange.
Yeah, exactly. In the United States, they collect information from banks in other countries. They do not share information with other countries, apart from in very limited circumstance. So for any crook who's wanting to evade tax in a country outside the United States is a very, very accommodating tax haven. Mainland Europe appear to be losing market share. Switzerland, Germany and so on, they're all losing market share, down from close to 29% in 2007 to about 27% now. And this, I think, is probably explained by the gradual impact of the changes we've seen over the last 10 years, particularly the move towards automatic information exchange and the adoption, even by Switzerland, of automatic information exchange through the Common Reporting Standard. Britain is also losing market share, in fact, quite a significant amount of market share. Arguably, this is because there's a certain loss of confidence caused both by the financial crisis, which hit the British economy very deeply and hit London, obviously, very deeply, but also because of the effect of Brexit. And that's created a great deal of uncertainty. We've seen it's had a huge impact on sterling's value since the 2016 Brexit referendum. And there's also this steady drip feed of bad publicity around the British Virgin Islands, which came out very badly, and the Panama Papers and other scandals, for example, Paradise Papers, which reflect on a British law firm operating out of Bermuda and Jersey and so on. So I think that's had an impact on Britain. We're now seeing London recognised as the money laundering centre of the world, and that's not a good reputation to have. Now, finally, we have the Far East, and what we can clearly see is how the rise of that region as an economic power, the Pacific Rim and so on, is reflected in the growth of market share of their huge centres like Hong Kong and Singapore. Overall, the region has doubled its share of the global market in offshore financial services in the past decade, with both Hong Kong and Singapore having shown themselves pretty intransigent when it comes to signing up to improved financial transparency. So they have a growing market share, partly, arguably, because they simply will not engage with new standards on information exchange and so on. They remain highly secretive and politically committed to preserving that secrecy.
Right. And what does the Financial Secrecy Index tell us about other regions in the world? Well, it's a story of winners and losers, even when countries within a region have high secrecy levels of their own. And all roads still seem to lead back to the biggest offending countries topping the Financial Secrecy Index. Let's take the example of Latin America. Here's the Tax Justice Network's Andres Noble.
Latin America is not the biggest region in terms of providing financial secrecy, because even though they have a pretty high secrecy score, that means their legal framework is actually more secretive than that of the average of all the 112 jurisdictions. What happens, however, is that what we call in the FSI the global scale weight, which means basically the market share of offshore financial services, it is rather small in Latin America compared to other regions, especially when we think of OECD countries like the US and Europe. Now, what is interesting is that when we think of Latin America, or when we consider Latin America without all the jurisdictions that have any British connection, so not considering British overseas territories or crown dependencies or private council jurisdictions, then the secrecy score actually goes down. So that means it actually gets a bit better. It becomes a bit more transparent. And the other big difference is that the offshore financial services also goes down, because one of the top 10 jurisdictions, it's actually the Cayman Islands. And they have a pretty huge global scale weight, so have a pretty huge market share of offshore financial services. So when we consider that, then Latin America as a region contributes even less to global financial secrecy.
And when it comes to the less powerful countries in the world, the odds are stacked against them in other ways. For one example, some countries still don't exchange information automatically with some of the wealthiest countries in the world, where their tax revenue and illicit money is flowing too. Some of those countries are the biggest offenders at the top of the Financial Secrecy Index, and they're reluctant to exchange information. Rachel Etapoya of the Tax Justice Network in Malawi.
Financial secrecy jurisdictions across the world are hurting the continent, bleeding the continent of its much needed revenue, and the absence of automatic information exchanges between countries. One of the problems is that many African countries haven't actually signed up, so they are not part of the information exchange that's going on. And also other countries like Switzerland have decided to only enter bilateral agreements, arguing that they can't exchange information with so-called corrupt countries. So it means that many tax authorities in African countries don't have access to the necessary information that they would be able to use to pursue cases of tax evasion and avoidance. And the problem is that the burden ultimately falls with the citizens. And I mean, while there may be capacity challenges, that should not rule out having a free flow of information between tax authorities.
Right, and there's no shortage of shocking stories. And time after time, the jurisdictions at the top of the Financial Secrecy Index are absolutely key, aren't they?
Especially recently with Paradise Papers, and we had the Panama Papers that show how companies operating in Africa and African elite are using offshore jurisdictions sometimes to conceal assets and avoid taxes. I mean, the Panama Papers alone revealed about 2,000 South African companies and individuals that were using offshore jurisdictions. Of course, there may be some perfectly legitimate reasons for this, but there were also many cases where they were used for more nefarious purposes. And I mean, the Gupta leaks over the last year or so have been really telling of the way that the elite can exploit secrecy jurisdictions at the expense of a country. I mean, the Guptas, along with President Jacob Zuma's son, have exploited a treaty between South Africa and the United Arab Emirates to reduce the taxes they owe in South Africa. And according to one news station, News 24, this was set up to help move the proceeds from dubious state tenders out of South Africa to shell companies and into Dubai, where the taxes are very low if you can account it as a resident there.
The tricks of the trade. Dubai offers some very dubious residency packages for things like that. And it keeps going back to the size of the global offenders. And that's why the Financial Secrecy Index is so important. The OECD and the European Union might like to point the finger at tiny jurisdictions like Mongolia and Tunisia, but in the end, it's the big players we need to put the most pressure on most urgently. Those countries are always strangely missing from the farcical attempts at blacklists. And citizens in the Middle East, in Africa, just as in Latin America, are suffering directly from huge outflows of money and tax revenue to some of the most powerful countries in the world. Andres Noble.
What we know, not only from the FSI, but especially from other reports, is that there's a lot of illicit financial flows flowing outside of Latin America. And there is a lot of capital flight, actually, originated in Latin America. Now, where does all this money go, all this illicit money go? Well, unfortunately, much of it goes, or what we can assume is that this money goes to many of the top 10 jurisdictions in the Financial Secrecy Index. That means the US, that means Switzerland, very likely Singapore. There might be, and that is something that the Tax Justice Network is working on for the near future, which is a bilateral financial secrecy index, so as to understand which are the specific tax havens or secrecy jurisdictions in relation to a particular country. So then we might even have even more detailed information.
So, more light to be shone in the future, more data to come. What we're seeing, one of the concerns, unfortunately, in the future is that the tax haven secrecy business model is spreading and being adopted by some other countries, despite the fact they already suffer from some of those same practices at the hands of much bigger players. Kenya's of particular concern there, isn't it, Rachel?
Yeah, so it is interesting because financial secrecy isn't just affecting the continent, but some countries, as you said, are really starting to take advantage or have already taken advantage and position themselves as international financial centres. as they like to call it, it will come at a cost for the region. And Kenya has set itself up as a tax haven with the establishment of Nairobi International Financial Center. And it's a really interesting example of how the interests of Western financial service lobbyists have successfully lured the government into a race to the bottom. And this financial secrecy index is the first time we've assessed Kenya, and it has a very high secrecy score of 80 out of 100. And other countries are following suit. It's also concerning that Ghana might be reigniting old plans to set up an international financial services centre.
Right. And Andres, providing countries have governments that can see that joining the race to the bottom is not the way to go, countries aren't helpless, are they, to take action to protect themselves? What could, say, Latin America as a bloc do to combat these illicit financial flows and the loss in multinational corporate tax revenue from the region?
What Latin America could do as a bloc is basically become way more coordinated than what it currently is. So what they need to do is, in general, just to try and have a coordinated voice, especially when the OECD or other international organizations come to set up rules, because these are many international rules that many times may actually affect Latin America or not benefit it as much as it does in regards to the rich OECD countries, because after all, they are the ones creating the rules, and obviously they have their interests in mind, but not those of the Global South. Now, what Latin America could do as a bloc, but also what each specific individual country could do, is also to become more transparent, which is actually quite obvious. And becoming more transparent is not only so as for them not to be big tax havens, like Panama or Cayman could be, but also to prevent illicit financial flows from actually happening and taking place in their own territories. So if, say, a country like Argentina decides to require beneficial ownership registration and give public access to that, they could make sure that any company, entity or trust operating in Argentina will actually be disclosing the real owners. So there would be no risk of corruption or no risk of tax evasion. And any country like Argentina could simply say, unless you have provided all this beneficial ownership information, then this entity cannot open a bank account, it cannot own real estate, it cannot get government procurement or contract with the state, or it cannot sell any goods or service. So basically, there's a lot of things any country individually could start doing, which is basically becoming more transparent. And they could also try to have more coordinated countermeasures against typical tax havens that just don't want to become more transparent.
That's it for this month. For more information on the Financial Secrecy Index, go to www.financialsecrecyindex.com and check out the Tax Justice Network's website for more updates and analysis, which will be coming out on the index in the next few weeks on www.taxjustice.net. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next month with a special feature on the United States, now number 2 on the Financial Secrecy Index. Bye for now.